just in time.
You know, I could sing that song too, just in time. No, what's the way I could do it? Okay, so I did extensive travel for about 40 or 45 of those years. Most of it was domestic, but with the American Foundation for the Blind, I did a fair amount of international travel. And of course, I've done some international travel for fun and leisure. So what are my lessons learned? If I visit a country that has English as a primary language, and I'm traveling for business, I can travel by myself without concern. When I need assistance, I do a lot of asking. I do a lot of asking in the U.S., and I do a lot of asking in international environments also. So typically, there are a lot of people around. I try to avoid going places where I'm the only one around, because that's not a good place to be. Now, when I travel to countries that English is not the primary language, I've learned the hard way it's a good idea to have somebody who is sighted, a colleague or a friend, especially to find destination points more easily. I also try to secure foreign currency in advance. Local banks can do this for the most part. And yes, currencies in most countries are a heck of a lot more accessible than currency in the United States. We know that, right? Different sizes of bills, different sizes of coins, and some places they even have a little bump or two on the bills. Typically, I try to learn the denominations in advance, since I get the currency in advance, because I want to be able to more efficiently exchange money. So I do that in advance and learn the currency so I can do that. I do put my American money aside to avoid confusion. I didn't do that the first few times, and I started giving people dollar bills. Now, I never had any difficulty with credit cards, but I encourage people to let your credit card companies know in advance that you're going to international destinations, to avoid any concern they might have about fraudulent activity. I also purchase international phone plans, but you need to read the fine print. I incurred some substantial roaming charges in my phone because it wasn't advanced enough to handle Wi-Fi, and I used Wi-Fi every day while I was there, so I did incur some. They had a discount for me at the end, but I did incur some roaming charges. Many countries throughout the world require adapters. So when you want to plug in your electrical equipment into outlets, you need an adapter for it to work. So you need to know that whenever you go to a foreign country, to ask if adapters are required. In sleeping rooms, I've also noticed that the layout and the positioning of many objects are in different places and sometimes hidden. A lot of things are protruding at head levels, so I've gotten bruises, mostly in international hotels. The location of things such as soap, towels, shampoos, if it's available, are at odd levels. Another characteristic of many European, Australian, and other places is they have key card slots as you enter the door. So you have a key card, and you need to put your key card in a slot as you enter your sleeping room. That activates the electricity. So not only the lights, which most of us aren't concerned about, but it also activates the outlets, activates the air conditioning. So if you don't know that that exists, you're going to be in deep trouble. So a key card slot is often the case. I avoid doing a lot of traveling on sidewalks, in the streets, in many foreign countries independently, and using public transportation. Many streets and sidewalks are not well paved. Many sidewalks just stop or become very narrow very quickly. And some of the platforms aren't even and straight in subway platforms in some countries. Now, there are many travel apps available, and many of them are accessible. And you probably know about the recent publication in the National Braille Press that was written by Doug Wakefield and Judy Dixon, which is about travel apps. I think that's a great investment if you're planning to do a lot of traveling. Most of those apps apply mostly to the United States, but some of them do apply internationally. There's also the NLS magazine, Free, is a travel and leisure magazine. That's the name of it. I subscribe to that and get a lot of information about international destinations. When I arrive in hotels, whether or not I'm in the U.S. or any foreign destination, I always ask for assistance to get to my hotel. Yes, in the United States, most rooms are brailled, so you can get there independently. But whether or not there's braille in my room, I still ask for assistance because I want to know four things. There are bottles in my bathroom. They're all the same size. One is shampoo. One is conditioner. One is hand lotion. Sometimes they have mouthwash. They're all the same size. Sometimes you can smell the difference. Sometimes you can't. I want to know which is which. I want to know the remote for the TV. I want to know how to operate it. I have the bell person be with me so I can operate it, change stations. I want to know the features of the phone because sometimes there are direct dialing to the bell captain, to room service. And in some foreign countries, when you want to dial the internal operator, the hotel operator, it's 9, not 0. So I want to know that. And then the fourth thing I want to know is how to regulate the temperature in my room. Oh, my God. I've had more trouble doing that than anything else that I've, had. So to regulate temperature is also very important. So let me talk a little bit about how my observations about blind people throughout the country, throughout the world. First of all, in developed countries, I believe blind people, in my observation, live much like we do in the United States. I suspect, maybe it's because, you know, I'm prejudiced, but I suspect that maybe the employment rates of people who are blind might be even worse than ours in the United States, and we know it's pretty horrendous here. And maybe there are lower ranges, narrower ranges of jobs in many of these countries throughout the world than the United States. Again, it's my suspicion. Now, developing countries, in my experience, there is rampant discrimination against people with disabilities. And usually the blind people, even those who are leaders in their countries, live in poverty. Job opportunities are far and few between. But however, in some countries, blind people are employed in stereotyped positions. For example, in some Asian countries, many of the massage therapists you encounter are blind. And in Spain, the Organization of the Blind, which is the Organización Nacional de España, Ciegos España, which is ONCE, O-N-C-E, they run the lottery system for Spain. So as a blind person, you can get a job, but likely you're going to be in a street corner selling lottery tickets. Now, one other thing about ONCE, that organization, when I first started working at AFB in the early 90s, we were told that ONCE was the third largest corporation in the country of Spain, that its budget was $3 billion a year, which obviously tops any organization anywhere else in the world. So it's too bad we didn't, wouldn't it have been nice if ACB started the lottery system in the U.S.? It's probably too late, but we would have been well ahead of most people in the world. Let me talk a little bit about the World Blind Union. Have you guys heard about the World Blind Union? Okay. It is the primary international body fighting for the rights of people who are blind or visually impaired. It consists of country members. The size of the delegation of any country depends upon the population. However, the largest number of any delegation in the world is 10. So India and China have 10, USA has 10, and a couple of countries. At least half of the delegation has to come from organizations of the blind. So organizations like ACB and AFB are part of the U.S. delegation. There are 5 delegates from organizations of the blind in the USA. So NFB has 2 votes, ACB has 2 votes, and the Blinded Veterans Association has 1 vote. That's half of the 10-member delegation. For 4 years, I had the privilege of serving as an officer with the World Blind Union, and I was also president of the North American Caribbean region of the World Blind Union. So I traveled to semi-annual meetings of the World Blind Union, which were held throughout the world, and that was a great experience. Now, developing countries in the World Blind Union are always looking for funding. And back in the old days, when the U.S. had a little more money, it was the primary source of funding for the developing countries. Organizations like the American Foundation for the Blind had a separate budget allocation for international funding of some of the developing countries throughout the world. Nowadays, there are financial constraints in most organizations in the U.S., so developing countries are turning to other parts of the world for funding. And the organizations that seem to fund most countries or developing countries in their initiatives are Scandinavian countries, the UK, and Canada. Now, when Haiti experienced its devastating earthquake in 2011, some US countries did help fund because they lost their building. They needed to rebuild their building, restore their services. And I know ACB and AFB were two of those organizations that provided funding to the people from Haiti. But even then, most of the funding to help restore services and rebuild its building came from other countries throughout the world. Now, in terms of services, I think we as Americans, when we're looking for services, we want services from quality organizations, from people who are trained, experienced in providing those services. In developing countries, they can't pick and choose. They get what they get, and often they get nothing, but sometimes they get services provided by people who are not well trained, but at least they're getting something. There are 3 major international initiatives that the World Blind Union has fostered that I want to talk about. One is called the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. The Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities is really the same thing as our Americans with Disabilities Act. And many countries did sign on to the CRPD. Believe it or not, the U.S. was one of the last to sign on. That was President Obama who did it. But it has not been ratified by the Senate yet, because as many of you know, there are many senators that don't highly value the United Nations, and this is a United Nations treaty. So, and then of course they say, well, we've got the ADA, we don't need the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. The second is called the Marrakesh Treaty. You've probably heard about it. It was signed in 12, and it just became effective last September. It allows the exchange of accessible books, books in accessible format for blind people, among countries of the world. Now, a certain number of countries had to ratify this treaty before it came into effect, which was last September. I don't believe the U.S. has signed into it yet, but you have to ratify it in order to benefit from it. Now, again, the U.S. would not benefit much from getting accessible books, but boy, can we help a lot of English-speaking countries get our accessible books.
But there appears to be a really good chance we will.
Jeff said that he thinks it's a really good chance we're going to do it this year. We should ask that of Tony. I don't know if Tony mentioned that. Tony Stevens is not in the room, is he?
No, he is.
Okay. All right. The third initiative is the Quiet Car Initiative that all of you are familiar with. And Mitch is not here, but you can tell him that I, you know, gave him a compliment, because it was Mitch who actually came to the North American Caribbean region of the World Blind Union and said, we need to make sure that this becomes an international initiative. He wrote a position paper that was adopted by the North American Caribbean region of the World Blind Union. It was then adopted by the World Blind Union, and now it's a major initiative. So we really should thank Mitch for getting this whole thing started. Okay, so let me tell you about some of the countries I have visited. I might comment on one or two. For business, the countries that I visited are Jordan, and I want to stop there because I have never been treated better than by the people of Jordan. Now, they have an organization of the blind, which is their organization for the blind, so they do both services and advocacy. They are funded by the royalty of Jordan, so they have connections to the king and his family, and that's why they're so well-funded. But they treated us when we went there like kings and queens ourselves. Other countries that I've been to, Morocco, Argentina, Netherlands, Thailand, Japan, Canada, Uzbekistan, Brazil, Grenada, Bahamas, St. Kitts, Switzerland, Portugal, Spain, Barbados, South Africa, that was my experience, my first safari, Australia, Germany, France, and the UK, Russia, and Finland. Now, those are for business. The countries I visited for leisure, in addition to some of the above, Belgium, Denmark, Puerto Rico, and U.S. Virgin Islands. I know they're not international, but they are off the coast of the U.S. Bermuda, Iceland, and I'll tell you a great story about Iceland. I don't know whether any of you know Paul Poncilla. Paul is a retired professor at Western Michigan University, a VRT, vision rehab therapist. And Paul's guide dog couldn't make it from New York to Europe. And he and his wife loved to go to Europe. He found that the dog guide could get to Iceland, because it's about halfway, right? So what he would do is take the flight to Iceland, take care of his dog, get back on the flight, and then go to Europe. And one time he said, you know, I visited Iceland about 20 times. I might as well stay there. So Iceland is a country, as you know, way up there, but it has natural hot springs. So my wife and I went there about 20 years ago. And in February, when it was a little chilly outside, we were swimming in hot springs outside. Wonderful experience. Venezuela, Tanzania, Mexico, Sweden, Uruguay, Aruba, New Zealand, Madeira. Did I mention it? Yeah, Madeira. So those are the places I could think of that I've gone to. But no matter where I've gone to, and you've heard this said, and if you've done international travel, you said it yourself, it feels so great to have been born and live in the United States. There's nothing like living in this country. And I love that visiting this country's states too. My favorite state in the union, I'm not just saying this because I'm in California, but my favorite state is California. And I told my wife, if she ever wants to divorce me, she will find me in Newport Beach. I also love Hawaii. I could go to Hawaii every year if I could afford it. Arizona and Florida. Now, do you get the picture about why the states I like? All south. I've been in every state in the union except one, Montana. I do plan to go there one of these days. But I want to say a few other things about other experiences I've had, and that is river cruises and ocean cruises. Now, I've been to, the river cruise is a smaller boat, and I found I was able to get around pretty easily in a river cruise boat. However, the ocean liner that I experienced, I tried, but I couldn't find my cabin very easily. So I didn't do too many independent travel voyages on the ocean liner. The other thing that I'd like you to remember if you're a guide dog user is that many countries are not very kind to guide dogs. So especially in the Caribbean, we found that out working with the North American Caribbean region of the World Blind Union. We didn't like to go to the Caribbean because we couldn't use our guide dogs. But if you do have a guide dog and you are traveling anywhere outside of this country, you might want to check to see whether your guide dog will be allowed, because you certainly don't want to quarantine the guide dog for 6 months if you do travel throughout the world. So the only thing I can say, I encourage you to travel. Traveling is very rewarding. And as you guys know already, you don't have to see to really enjoy what you're experiencing wherever you go. Any questions or comments? Oh, thank you. Most countries I didn't drink the tap water. And you know, the funny thing about that, you've got to be careful even with a liquor. You know, in other words, you want a drink with ice cubes, you got to be careful about that, because ice cubes tend to melt. So yeah, I very, very careful. I just was in Australia and New Zealand, and I asked people there, the tour guides, and they said it was fun and I didn't have a problem. But I always ask, well, sometimes I've forgotten to ask, but you should always ask about the tap water, either in advance or as soon as you get there, because usually the hotel people will be able to tell you, or running across some American travelers will help too. Good question. My dear lady, I have trouble with all bathrooms and every place I've been to except my own house. Lavatories are always positioned in different ways. You can never find the towel dispenser. You don't know where to throw it away. Lavatories in aircrafts are all different. And yes, I have had that problem. You want to say more about it? Yep. Yeah. I've experienced that too. Not getting soaked, but finding holes in the floor. Not a very funny thing. A fun thing. I was in a domestic airport in Moscow, and I went into the men's room with a colleague, and there was something happening in the urinal next to the one that I was using. And as I was leaving, the guy who was with me said, "Carl, you're not going to believe this, but there was a woman cleaning the urinal right next to you. She was on her hands and knees cleaning the urinal." I'm glad I found out afterwards, because there's no way I would be able to do anything. Other questions, comments?
Yes, I have a comment.
Yes.
I travel up and down the state all the time. Well, you know, go
Yep. Yep. Yeah, you know, it's, I'm glad you brought that up for another reason. You know, some of these wide bodies, trying to find laboratories on your own is somewhat difficult. So I usually get a flight attendant to walk with me, to help me find. Sometimes you can walk way, way, way in the back, no matter how big a wide body is, and find restrooms back there. But, you know, the problem is sometimes you're only three or four seats, rows from a restroom. So I'd like to have someone to show me. And sometimes it's not easy to get back. So I'd like to know where the nearest flight attendant is. So in case I get lost, I know how to find him or her to make sure I get back. Any other questions, comments? Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's a very good point. Let's talk about the second thing first. It's always good when you're going into museums to ask if you could touch things. Sometimes they'll let you do it. They'll give you a pair of white gloves, and they'll let you do it. Funny story about that. When I moved to Cincinnati, I lived there for 6 years, I heard about a blind tour of the local museum. So my wife and I went there, and I was given pair of gloves, and she brought me to the very first sculpture, and it was a pair of women's breasts. So then we went to the second sculpture, and it was another pair of women's breasts. And I looked at my wife, and I said, "What are you trying to do to me? You're embarrassing me." And she said, "I'm just following the numbers, the chronological order." But no, seriously, whenever you go to some place like that, always ask if you can touch. They may not be able to let you touch, but some places do have some special exhibits for blind people. I love tactile maps. My problem is I'm not very good at it. I want to compliment whoever did the tactile maps of San Francisco. I still have my tactile maps of San Francisco. Anybody has ever used that tactile map of San Francisco? There's Jeff has. It's a wonderful tactile map of San Francisco. My problem is, I don't know if anybody experiences this, I find that with tactile maps or braille maps, there's either too few dots or too many dots. I can't seem to get the perfect. But I have used them. When AFB moved, we made sure that there was a tactile map so that our blind employees could get oriented to the facility, and it could be very, 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 very helpful. Other questions or comments? One more. I get that in the United States.
People were aware of how
If they are, I don't know about it, but that's a great experience. That's really nice that you've experienced that. One other thing I want to comment on, then I got to get back to Jeff, and we have other sessions to go to. But one of the biggest problems I have felt with congenitally blind kids is sex education. A lot of kids don't know what the other mature sex gender person looks like, right? We try to do that through scale models and all of that kind of thing. I remember reading an article in the Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness before I even worked at AFB, so this is prior to the 1990s, where in Scandinavia, I don't know if it was Denmark, Norway, or Sweden, one of those countries, or Finland, one of the countries, they had actually live models so that the blind person could feel what the person, the 8-year-old, for example, could experience what the person of the other gender, the adult, feels like, so they can have a better, that would never happen in the U.S., right? Never happen. But think about it. If you really want to, your 9-year-old totally blind kid from birth to experience, that's probably the best way to do it. Because
we may not invite you back. You're getting there you go. Let's hear it for Carl. That wasn't that a great set of remarks? That was awesome. We appreciate that. So if you have other ideas for future international luncheons, let us know, because I think this is going to be an ongoing part of each convention, and I'm excited about the first one.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, and it's on to general session.